This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Are you looking to save 50, 60, even 70% on your phone bill? Well, here's a tip. Broadvoice.com. Hi, it's Brad Staggs of Blaze TV here. Broadvoice offers high-quality phone service for only $8.95 a month. You may ask, how can I save so much money? What's the catch? Well, the secret is the technology. Broadvoice uses VoIP technology that takes analog audio signals from your phone, turns them into digital data, and then transfers them over the internet. This means crystal clear sound and cheaper phone bills. Broadvoice has been ranked in the Deloitte Technology Fast 500 and Inc. 500 as one of the fastest growing private companies in America. Get Broadvoice right now for only $8.95 a month. Keep your existing phone number for free, and Broadvoice will send you their easy plug-in adapter free. All this, and you get unlimited local calling for just $8.95 a month. Plus, for a limited time, Broadvoice will even give you your first month free. Do what we did here at Blaze Radio. Make the switch today at Broadvoice.com or call 888-332-8036. 888-332-8036.
Welcome back to the Glenn Beck Program. I am John Cardillo, guest hosting for Glenn while he's on vacation. And if you're just tuning in, I'll tell you a little bit about who I am. We'll be here with you tomorrow morning as well. I wasn't a media guy. I was a New York City cop and a guy who founded a business. I was security related. I was working with law enforcement as much as I was when I was active. And I spent my time in the legislative arena. Well, I testified in about 15 to 20 states to the U.S. Congress, worked on legislation, learned how the whole consulting, lobbying, cronyism game went down, and saw, when I combined that with my law enforcement lens, that our country was kind of a mess. And I decided to go full on into media to get the word out there and sort of take people behind that police line and into those legislative hearings, really give you my view of the world through my personal experience. Give the show a call, 888-727-BECK. 888-727-BECK, and follow on Twitter. You can follow me at John Cardillo. I've been live tweeting whatever is relevant and interesting during the show. And you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about, and you always save the best for last, is sort of how I got here and the things I saw. And last hour, before we took some callers, some animated callers, we were talking a little bit about how children are indoctrinated. And I know that's cliche, and we know that the public school systems especially have really become indoctrination camps. And one of the places this starts, and indoctrination camps for progressivism, let me be clear and tell the story in a linear way. One of the places this starts, and I would say one of the organizations most responsible for this, and in a very, very bad way, are the teachers' unions. Now, people don't understand just how radical they are, so I'm going to tell you. You've heard, and Glenn has spoken about SEIU, Service Employee International Union, over the years. He's spoken about it time and time again. He and I did a segment where we mapped out all of these radical groups causing unrest in the U.S. And SEIU was a major fundraiser for these groups, not behind the scenes. SEIU, on their website, proudly boasted about giving these groups money. And when I started to look into SEIU, something became a bit concerning to me, and it was their relationship with the AFL-CIO, which they claim really never existed. Both unions claimed that they acted autonomously and independently. And I became concerned because if you listen to my show, my morning show down in Miami, or you know my brand, or you follow me on Twitter, you know that law enforcement is near and dear to my heart. I'm a member of the law enforcement community for life, and it's a topic that I'm very interested in, and I talk about often. And I noticed that the AFL-CIO started to get into police unions through what's called IUPA, International Union of Police Associations. And some of the cops were well-versed in what AFL-CIO is about and their connection to SEIU. And others weren't. And they thought, well, we've got this big organization bargaining for us. It's a good thing. I tried to warn them and say, hey, these are very left-wing, radical, anti-police organizations. And the nexus, what most people don't know, is the nexus of AFL-CIO and SEIU is at the teachers union level. In the New York City school system, there's the UFT, the United Federation of Teachers, and they have about 250,000 or so members because of the sheer size of the New York City public school system. That is an SEIU union. But they're also members, because they're teachers, of the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, which is an AFL-CIO union. So those unions share 250,000 members, despite telling people they're unaffiliated. And Randy Weingarten, who was president of United Federation of Teachers, is now president of, you guessed it, the American Federation of Teachers. Randy Weingarten, who is one of Hillary Clinton's bestest buddies in her inner circle. Hillary Clinton first announced her run for Senate from New York State in a very soft launch on stage with Randy Weingarten. That's how much influence this woman yields. And so when you understand just how progressive the teachers' unions are and how much sway they hold over promotions and bumping up to assistant principal and principal, and if you don't toe their very progressive line, you don't get promoted, you start to better understand, and this is why Americans really need to understand this, you start to better comprehend why schools are so radically left. This is not by chance. There is a holistic ecosystem in which progressive indoctrination exists. Now, Michelle Malkin, you guys all know the great Michelle Malkin's a good friend of mine. And back in July, Michelle Malkin and I went to the White House and we handed out blue glow sticks in honor of law enforcement officers killed because Barack Obama wouldn't light the White House blue for police officers who had been killed in the line of duty and to show support. So Michelle and I put together an event alongside some law enforcement friends of mine called Blue Light Friday. And it was absolutely outstanding. Hundreds of people showed up outside the White House. Bagpipers from the D.C. Fire Department showed up. It was such a great event. And then we handed out, a couple of hundred glow sticks. And members of the public were coming up, shaking our hands. It was awesome. It was great. And in the cab on the way back, we were going to a restaurant. We went to dinner afterward. Michelle and I were talking. And we were talking about how this ecosystem works. And it's not just a matter of when I hear people say, well, if only CNN would get rid of so-and-so, or if only MSNBC would fire this one, or if this producer wasn't any longer a segment producer, and we saw this with Dan Rather and the falsified Bush documents, etc. But no, it's much larger. It has penetrated so much deeper than one on-air host or five on-air hosts or one producer. The line of succession in newsrooms, in production houses, and Tiffany Gabay is here with me, and she's shaking her head yes, because you've seen this. It's systemic. The line of succession is already hired, and they were indoctrinated at the Columbia School of Journalism, at NYU Film School, at USC, in these very liberal programs coming out of very progressive schools. So it starts with teachers handpicked and cultivated by the very radical, very left-wing UFT, United Federation of Teachers in New York City, and the AFT around the country, American Federation of Teachers. And then they get into college. Well, who escalates up to the college level? These same radically liberal academics who, you know, cut their teeth and made their bones at the high school level and got their PhDs. And they're teaching these students at the Columbia School of Journalism, at Mizzou's Journalism School. They're teaching them at USC, at NYU. And you know what? The people they teach are rising in the ranks. So they're hiring out of the same radically liberal programs that from which they graduated. And the hosts are coming out of these programs. And that's why I think that hosts like Glenn Beck and even people to a lesser extent like myself resonate with you, because we weren't cultivated in those progressive petri dishes. We were people who saw the world a unique way with opinions just like you. And we come to you and we say, hey, we have certain life experience. Now, I'm not going to sit here and talk to you about neurosurgery because I don't know much about neurosurgery. I know good neurosurgeons and I'll bring them on and I'll give them the segment. But I do know the way of the world through the lens of law enforcement and the political process, which I think makes me a pretty effective conservative talk host. But when I give it to you through my lens, I'm giving you the gritty lens. And it's a lens that most people haven't looked through. And others don't want to look through. And boy, the progressives want to do nothing but spray paint that lens black so you'll never see through it. And I think that until we, as conservatives, start to understand that we have to create our own system. We have got to cultivate our own systemic penetration of conservatives into the newsrooms, into the editorial houses, into the production desks. And we have to put our own people on air that are also cultivating these not just conservative ideas, but fresh ideas, new ideas. I mean, when you think about it, if you turn on ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, or MSNBC, well, there might be different copy, but you're getting the same message. And I did this exercise with a couple of people a few months ago, and I printed written transcripts of the ABC, CBS, NBC evening news alongside CNN and MSNBC. And you cannot tell the difference. There's no difference in the story. There's really very little difference in the editing of the copy. There's little difference in the cadence of the host. In fact, if you were to blur the voice, or if you synthesized the voice to where all the voices sounded the same, you couldn't tell any of the evening news hosts apart because the content they're disseminating, and we know this through what we saw come out of the DNC leaks, the content they're disseminating is really content that was cartelled. Much like the Colombian and Mexican cocaine cartels, like the Wise Guys, La Cosa Nostra in New York, with the garbage cartel, they all sit around in a room with like-minded people and they decide, okay, this is your region, that's your region, you're going to control this part, you're going to control that part, you're going to control that piece, and we're all going to agree what you're going to control, and we're all going to agree on a central message, and each of you are going to get a little snippet to run with. And that's what's happening. And until we on the right, start to do something about that, they're going to control the narrative. Luckily, I'm seeing some pushback on it. But one of the things that's bothering me is this whole concept of fake news. And if you follow me on Twitter and others on Twitter, you've seen the hashtag fake news. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later on, a specific story about Trump's private security. But I want to talk to you about it in a more general sense when we come back from break. I want to talk to you about fake news and what is the alt-right. Stick around. You with John Cardillo. The Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment.
We are one. The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
Are you looking to save 50, 60, even 70% on your phone bill? Well, here's a tip. Broadvoice.com. Hi, it's Brad Staggs of Blaze TV here. Broadvoice offers high-quality phone service for only $8.95 a month. You may ask, how can I save so much money? What's the catch? Well, the secret is the technology. Broadvoice uses VoIP technology that takes analog audio signals from your phone, turns them into digital data, and then transfers them over the internet. This means crystal clear sound and cheaper phone bills. Broadvoice has been ranked in the Deloitte Technology Fast 500 and Inc. 500 as one of the fastest growing private companies in America. Get Broadvoice right now for only $8.95 a month. Keep your existing phone number for free and Broadvoice will send you their easy plug-in adapter free. All this and you get unlimited local calling for just $8.95 a month. Plus, for a limited time, Broadvoice will even give you your first month free. Do what we did here at Blaze Radio. Make the switch today at broadvoice.com or call 888-332-8036. 888-332-8036.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
And you're on.
Welcome back to the Glenn Beck Program. I'm John Cardillo, sitting in for Glenn. Give us a call, 888-727-BECK. And you can follow me on Twitter, at John Cardillo. I'm live tweeting some of the interesting goings-on during the show. Before we get into the next section, segment, we've got a caller, Julie from Texas. Good morning, Julie. How are you?
I'm good. You were saying earlier in the show that you were going to address the fears of some of us that were not Trump fans. And yes. Why his rhetoric did not scare you. And I really would like to hear your take on that, because frankly, it scared the daylights out of me.
Well, it's a great point. And you know what? Yes, let's get into that, because it was something I was going to talk about a little bit in a few minutes, but you're on the line, so we might as well. The reason it didn't scare me, and thanks so much for the call, ma'am. The reason it didn't scare me is because I think a lot of the things Donald Trump says and the style in which he says it, his delivery, so to speak, it's a very New York delivery. And I was a guy who grew up in Queens, only about four or five neighborhoods away from where Donald Trump grew up. He sounds like my father. He sounds like my friend's dads. He sounds like my uncles. He sounds like some of my school teachers. The guys I grew up with, it's a gruff, very matter-of-fact, unpolished delivery. But behind that, there's a frustration because he's a guy who just wants to get to work. And there's a story about his son, Eric, a few weeks back. He was going to Scotland, and a Muslim comedian sat next to him and had all these fears about Muslim ID and internment camps. And Eric Trump, the guy felt Eric Trump was cavalier when he said, "Oh, come on, you really don't think we're going to do that kind of stuff, do you?" Now, I'll admit, as a New York guy, and as a guy who was a New York City cop, so I was never worried about being the most polished deliverer of information and about political correctness, I was a bit ignorant to what the rest of the country would perceive when a guy like Donald Trump came and gave his Queens, New York delivery. I thought it was no big deal. But until I started hearing from the audience on my show and people that follow me on Twitter, and I was traveling around the country and I attended rallies outside, Trump rallies outside of South Florida, did I understand that, you know, this what we have here is something that's being lost in translation. People are unfamiliar with the delivery, and they're unfamiliar with the style of the messenger, and I thought a high-quality message was being lost. So that's why I didn't see it the way many others did, but I think I had an unfair advantage. I sort of had the Trump to English dictionary growing up in Queens, New York. Julie, still there? Okay, maybe we lost Julie. But that was that was my take on it. I didn't, and I'm glad we got into this. I really didn't have an issue with Donald Trump's delivery, and I saw a guy who was also as frustrated as I was. I started seeing somebody, and Tiffany, you and I have spoken about this. I started seeing a candidate who was as frustrated as I was with the state of the nation, and I was a little fed up with uber-polished candidates. Very fed up with them. And it's a good segue into what I wanted to talk about, this whole phenomenon of fake news and what we call the alt-right. Now, let me preface this by saying, I despise, I disown, I disavow, and I don't give a second of attention to white supremacists, racists, bigots, anti-Semites, people who disrespect our Constitution by wanting to single out a particular group for draconian treatment over others. I don't put up with any of that. I don't deal with you. I block you on social media. I don't retweet you. I don't follow you. I don't acknowledge you. I despise conspiracy theories. I despise 9/11 conspiracy theories and Sandy Hook conspiracy theories. I think they do a tremendous disrespectful disservice to victims, and they spread this hashtag fake news. And one of the things we're guilty of on the right, now the left is very guilty of it, but one of most recent and most egregious examples of fake news that we on the right were guilty of, and people on that fringe, weirdo alt-right, was this idiotic Pizzagate conspiracy that somehow Hillary Clinton was part of some pedophile ring run out of the basement of a pizzeria in D.C. And this all started because a blog, and I'm not even going to give the name of the blog because they don't deserve the attention, made up information. They made it up. They posted it. They claim to have sources in the NYPD they didn't have. They claim to have spoken to NYPD chiefs. It never happened. And they created this entire false narrative. They took four unrelated investigations, conflated them into one, and too many on the right ran with that ridiculous nonsense. But many others didn't. And what I don't want to also have happen is I don't want everybody who is not mainstream media, and even on the right, if you're not on air, if you're not on The Blaze, if you're not at Breitbart, if you're not a Daily Caller, I don't want you being labeled alt-right conspiracy theory, a conspiracy theorist, just because you're not with one of the big outlets. Because I like to look for fresh talent and fresh new content and good minds. And there are thousands and thousands of conservative bloggers out there and people on podcasts and small radio shows who do their job with integrity, who adhere to strict journalistic standards, who find the right sources and get them on the record, and they write beautifully, and they're turning out outstanding content. But because they're not with one of the big shops, they can very easily be dismissed as alt-right. And we're also doing ourselves a tremendous disservice when we do that, because we're leaving very good content on the table. Citizen journalism is a really powerful thing. A really powerful thing. Millions of eyes and ears around the country are very powerful things. The internet has given us a source network we've never before had. We've got to cultivate it very carefully. We have to make sure that those sources have integrity and they're honest and they're ethical and they're accurate. But to dismiss them and to say, oh, you're alt-right. Oh, you're a whack job. I've never heard of you. Ergo, you're alt-right. I've never heard of you. Therefore, you must be disregarded. That's really dangerous, because that creates on the right that same information cartel that I was just talking about that has been created on the left. So let's not shut out these solid voices. But there's this really dumb piece of fake news floating around that Donald Trump is disregarding the Secret Service and instead using a private security force. It's ridiculous. And Ed Hartnett, good friend of mine, former chief of intelligence of the NYPD, is going to be joining me in a couple of minutes to talk about just how silly it is and how to debunk, and he's going to debunk that for us. Stick around. You're with the Glenn Beck Program. John Cardillo sitting in for Glenn. Early there. But Ed is a world-class expert. Sorry about that. I was going to go to break a little too soon. He's a world-class expert. He was chief of intelligence on 9/11, and I really want him, his unit liaise with the Secret Service, so I really want you to hear his take on this. And now I'm going to go to commercial. You're with John Cardillo sitting in for Glenn, the Glenn Beck Program. Welcome back to the Glenn Beck Program. I'm John Cardillo. I'm helming the mic for Glenn while he's on a much-deserved vacation. We were talking a little bit in the last segment about fake news, and there's a story. As a former law enforcement guy, when people get stories about security wrong, it's a pet peeve. It irks me. And there's a story in Politico from Ken Vogel. Now, Ken Vogel, you remember this guy. He was the reporter in the WikiLeaks emails who was sending his stories to the DNC for edit and approval. So anything this guy writes, I take with a grain of salt. And the story's entitled, Trump Private Security Force Playing with Fire. And the implication is that Donald Trump is disregarding the Secret Service and fielding his own security force, which is kind of ridiculous. But I wanted to bring somebody in to talk about this who intimately understands the dynamic of the Secret Service's interaction with private security teams and local police. Very good friend of mine is joining me, Edmund Hartnett. Ed was chief of intelligence. The NYPD's chief of intelligence on 9/11 went on to be the police commissioner of Yonkers, New York, and is now a global private security expert. He's an expert on terror and global security, really my go-to guy. Commissioner, thanks for being here. Good morning.
Good morning, John. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Merry Christmas. You've been long overdue, this call. So there's this article, and basically the implication is that Donald Trump has this private security force that's getting in the way of the Secret Service. I read it differently. Maybe you and I have unique perspectives on this. Some of these guys, one is a retired NYPD guy who left the job in 1999. He's a Navy veteran. He worked for Trump since 99. And these guys, to me, have really just become Donald Trump's aides and body men. They're not interfering with the Secret Service. The rallies I've been to, it seems like a well-choreographed, well-oiled machine where they're all working very effectively together. Now, when you were chief of intelligence, I'm sure most listeners don't know, but the NYPD Intelligence Division is the unit that liaises with the Secret Service when the president or the first family is in New York City. So you have intimate experience dealing with the private security teams and the staffs of presidents of the United States. Tell us a little bit about this. Am I downplaying this, or is this a genuine concern?
To me, John, it's not a genuine concern. I mean, anything I've seen, anything I've heard from people I know still in the business, in the public sector and the private sector side, describes Donald Trump's security team relationship with the Secret Service as seamless coordination. The guy we always see on TV with the president-elect, Keith Schiller, is the gentleman you referenced. He's a retired NYPD, retired Navy officer, consummate professional. Everything I've seen and heard about him, he does not get in the way. Good security is done You're almost like the umpire in the baseball game. If it's done right, you don't even see the guy. You don't even hear from the guy. So anything I see being blown up by like Politico or by Salon.com, where they're referring to the president-elect security team as this private mercenary army, I think is one of the quotes, is ridiculous. They don't seem to refer to Jay-Z and Beyonce as having a private mercenary army, but they probably have just as much security as Donald Trump does.
Maybe more. I mean, we saw that Ivanka Trump and her husband were harassed on a JetBlue flight. They didn't have a phalanx of security officers around them. And in addition to now being part of the first family, they're a wealthy couple who could certainly afford it. If anything, it seems the Trump family was trying to live a pretty normal life before being elected. I mean, look, he's a famous guy and he lives opulently. But with the way that the kids, his children and the grandchildren were trying to operate, seems like they didn't have these armies of security around them, like you so accurately say, Ed. We see celebrities have with their motorcades. You know, I read a story. Chris Pine, the actor who's in the Star Wars movies, he plays Kirk. Jeff Bezos had a role on the set of the new film, and Chris Pine didn't know who he was, but he said, "Well, Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon." But he said, "Well, I knew he was someone important when he showed up with like 25 SUVs and a security army." And he said, "You know, the heads of the studios didn't have that." So you make a great point. So tell us a little bit about, because I know people are interested in this, how, for example, Donald Trump's going to be spending a lot of time in New York City. The president-elect is going to be there. It's his second home. His wife and young son are staying there. What's the NYPD's role going to be in all this? How are they going to interact with the Secret Service and at the same time effectively police the rest of the city?
Yeah, no, again, having firsthand experience, John, nobody, in no place in the country is the relationship between Secret Service and the local police stronger than it is in New York City. Because of the nature of the city and the United Nations being there and every dictator, king, president, ruler, prime minister comes to New York City sometimes a few times a year. So that role, that coordination between the Secret Service and the NYPD is outstanding. It's exemplary. It can't be matched anywhere else in the country. So the NYPD will coordinate with the Secret Service for everything that involves the Trump family. If there are private security officers involved, and we've had it many times, again, with visiting dignitaries when they come with their people, it will be seamless. When the president is sworn in, he will be, his security will be run by the Secret Service. They'll liaise with his private security people. They'll tap into their knowledge and expertise because they'll need it. But security for the president of the United States and his immediate family will be run and coordinated by the Secret Service in D.C., in New York City, and wherever the president goes.
I'm speaking with Edmund Hartnett, former chief of intelligence of the New York City Police Department, then Yonkers Police Commissioner, also very good personal friend of mine. And you're always my go-to guy on these issues. You're the most knowledgeable guy I know on this, and you stay very current. Let's talk a little bit about the upcoming New Year's holiday. Now, we've got the president-elect from New York City, most of his family living in New York City. We've got New Year's Eve in New York City, arguably the largest gathering of people in the world every year. What is the NYPD, without disclosing operational security, I want to always have the listeners, understand what goes into the security protocols. But at the same time, these are always careful segments for me because I never want to tell too much of how we do what we do. But insofar as you can tell through your experience, what is the NYPD going to do to both protect the family of the president-elect and safeguard the city on New Year's Eve as they would if the president-elect's family didn't live in New York?
Well, first, the planning that goes into this stuff is incredible. It's mind-boggling. They don't just take out last year's folder, dust it off, and set the plan in place. These plans are made months ahead of time. These plans were made with contingencies for either Secretary Clinton winning or Mr. Trump winning. So the planning goes into this stuff, like I said, is incredible. They'll also tap into anything that's going on in the world right now, no matter where it is. It could be areas of the country we're not familiar with, but there's something happening there, some hot spot there, and maybe there's some connection now to New York City. Trust me, the NYPD and their federal partners will be all over it. The planning that goes into a regular New Year's Eve, if there is such a thing, with the Times Square detail, the backflips that people have to do to get into the pens alone, the screening that goes on, overtly and covertly, is incredible. You can't rule out anything. You can't rule out some lone wolf trying to do something. But I guarantee you, on the investigative side even, they're looking at various people that may or may not cause problems, and they want to know exactly where they are at any given moment. So, again, the plan that goes into this is incredible. I think people that want to go to New Year's Eve should go and have a good time, be safe. But I'll obviously look around for anything suspicious. But I think it's going to be a great New Year's, as always. And I know I'm prejudiced, but nobody does it as well as the NYPD.
No, I happen to agree, and you know, we might get flamed for that, but I don't think it's because it's our alma mater. I think it's out of necessity, right? Out of necessity and sheer size. We've got New York City and all its landmarks. We've got the New York Stock Exchange, or the hub of banking and finance for the world. The exact targets terrorists want to hit. They want to destroy capitalism. You're going to hit New York. You're going to hit London. And the NYPD, being the largest, being the most robust, well-funded agency out there, they really didn't have a choice but to be thrust into the role they were. And I'm speaking with Edmund Hartnett, former chief of intelligence of the NYPD. And I've got a question for you that might be a bit depressing this holiday season, but I've been talking a lot today about global security, terror, lone wolves. What's the situation that keeps you awake at night? You're now with a private risk firm, Brosnan Risk, run by another good friend of ours. You guys have state-of-the-art intelligence on the private side. You've seen it up close and personal. You had the highest levels of security clearance. You know how this stuff works. What's the one thing that keeps you awake at night in terms of a terror threat to the United States as we sit here today, December 26th, 2016?
You know, we always talk about those, you know, various things, suicide bombers, explosive-laden vehicles, and Mumbai-style mass shooting incidents. So all that stuff, you know, always concerns me. Kind of a subset of that, to me, is a group that cannot be cracked, that cannot be infiltrated. And I use an example, and I hate them, but I use them as an example, the Tsarnaev brothers in Boston and the Boston Marathon bombing. You know it's your brother. You know your brother's not an informant. You know your brother's not been flipped. You know your brother is not an undercover FBI agent. So when you get a group like that that just can't be infiltrated, to me, that's the one, that's the thing that makes me most fearful, that you get two guys or three guys, family members that have grown up, that have maybe even done bad acts together. If you've seen someone kill someone, say, for example, 5 years earlier, you pretty much know that guy is good. He's a good member of your team. He's not been turned. He's not been infiltrated. He's not an agent. So when you get that kind of hardcore group that just can't be cracked, that's what probably concerns me the most. And that kind of group can do a suicide bomb attack. They can do a Mumbai-style attack. They can do the explosive-laden vehicle or the truck driver thing like we've seen in Nissan in Berlin.
So it really does come down to, for average Americans, if you see something, say something. Don't be afraid of political correctness. If that family next door seems to be doing something nefarious, call 911. I mean, really, American citizens are our best eyes and ears, too. Because those, you know, asymmetrical, low-tech attacks that don't require chatter because they're family members or friends, I agree with you, they scare me to death. And it really is up to American citizens to tip off law enforcement and the intelligence community, correct?
I think so, and I think we're hopefully seeing society getting away from that a bit. San Bernardino, which resulted in many people getting killed, I think people after that said they wish they had called. They had seen something suspicious with that married couple, and they wish they had called, but they didn't want to be branded as bigots. They didn't want to be branded as being prejudiced. I think we're slowly but surely having people come out of that dangerous political correctness that we've seen.
You know, I hope you're right. I tend to agree with you, Ed, and as I usually do, and I hope you're right. You have a great new year, my friend. We're going to be speaking very, very soon. I'm going to have you on air with me often in 2017. Have a great one.
You're doing a great job. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Eddie. That was Edmund Hartnett, and really is a world expert on this, former chief of intelligence on 9/11. And I'll let him tell his 9/11 story one day. It is absolutely, absolutely captivating. A real American hero. Understated and unsung American hero. When we come back, I'm going to give my final thoughts on today's political situation, all the craziness over the weekend. You're with John Cardillo, the Glenn Beck Program.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Mercury. Is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Glenn Beck Program. I'm John Cardillo, sitting in for Glenn. And, you know, before the break, I teased you a little bit, said I want to talk about the craziness of the news this weekend. And all through the show, people have been emailing me and texting me, you forgot to mention that George Michael died. You forgot to mention that George Michael died. And I didn't. And I get it. And it's news. But to me, a celebrity passing away, albeit a relatively young one at 53 years old, is not the biggest news in the world when we've got a pretty severe terror problem. And we've got resolutions happening at the UN over Christmas weekend when they can be hidden in the media. And that was done for a reason when it was done, so that the media would hide it, would obfuscate it for Obama. I think it's my responsibility to bring you the stories that affect your life ongoing. And as sad as it may be, if you listen to George Michael's music, and as sad as it is that a 53-year-old died and they've got family and friends, the death of George Michael is not going to affect your life, unless you're his agent or an attorney or someone that makes money off of his music portfolio. But this resolution against Israel is, and the false narratives about lone wolf terrorists are, and fake news and the proliferation of fake news. These are the things that are going to affect you. And what I try to do when I come on air is look for all of the things that the mainstream media is hiding when a celebrity passes away or a conservative says or does something stupid. I look for all the things that the media is hiding under those nonsensical stories or those stories that should be given 10, 15 minutes of airtime, and dig out those treasures and bring them to you. Because it's a pretty safe bet that if the mainstream left-wing media isn't reporting something significant, then that thing is really significant. Tiffany, you're an analyst to this. I mean, what do you think about that? You're rational.
Of course. And I cannot understate how powerful the media is. It completely shapes our narrative. It shapes the way we view the world. The stories they report, the stories they don't report. So absolutely, if you have people spending more time or news outlets spending more time on fake news and on stories like George Michael and my condolences, of course, and you know, any passing is sad. But when you have, again, the UN resolution that just passed against Israel, you have terrorist attacks, you know, ravaging the globe. I think we really need to take stock and focus on what's important, because media want nothing more than to have the American public take their eye off the ball.
Yep, they do. And to dumb us down and to have us focus only on a story about a celebrity passing. And let's face it, death is a part of life. I don't mean to sound morbid, and hopefully people don't pass during the holiday season. But again, if tomorrow I were to pass away, it really doesn't affect the lives of people outside of my family. I would hope that the media, you know, and people around me continue to keep their eye on the ball of the things that are important. I don't want to end on a morbid note, but I'm trying to be a pragmatic guy. And that's the reason that I didn't focus on that story or make that story such a big deal as we were doing the show today, because I gave it, you know, the attention I felt it deserved, which is a nice little 30. Condolences at the end of the show. But I do want to end the show by saying, wow, I'm going to be back here with you guys tomorrow morning. This has been such an amazing experience for me. A heartfelt thank you to Glenn and his team. A heartfelt thank you to the staff at Mercury and here on the Glenn Beck program. Such a supportive group. These guys have been outstanding, men and women, at helping me prep for the show. I will be back with you all tomorrow morning. I'm John Cardillo. Catch me on Twitter at John Cardillo. Sitting in for Glenn Beck, the Glenn Beck radio program. Thanks for listening.
This is the Glenn Beck program.
I'll talk to you tomorrow. Mercury.